I want to pray with you. This is a traditional prayer before you begin the study of the Word. Baruch atah Adonai, Eloheinu melech haolam, asher kidshanu b'mitzvotav, v'tzivanu la'asok bidvarei Torah. Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who sanctifies us with His commands and commands us to be engaged with the words of Torah. Amen. Parshat Tzav is this week's Torah portion. It focuses on a variety of sacrifices, including one that is called Olah, or in Hebrew, Ha'olah. Say that with me, Ha'olah. And it's a burnt offering, an offering that rises up in smoke. And the question that occupied Jewish sages was this: for what purpose was this offering given? And the conclusion is fascinating, and it is not well known among modern Jews. But the answer was this: this olah, this burnt offering sacrifice, was specifically given for sinful thoughts, for thoughts that are forbidden. Now, this weekend is Shabbat HaGadol, the great Shabbat, which comes before Passover. It's a time to remember the 10th of Nisan, that day of the month, 4 days before the night of Passover, the 14th of Nisan, when Jewish families took a lamb to their homes. Each household in Egypt of the children of Israel had to take one of their flock that was without spot or blemish, and they had to bring it to their home. They took it out of the flock and out of the place where the sheep were normally kept, and they brought it home. They kept it for 4 days. And then that night, that Passover night, that lamb was sacrificed. And the blood of that lamb was placed on the doorposts of the houses of the children of Israel as a sign to God, so that He would protect them from the angel of death and from the slaying of the firstborn sons. Many of us have a simple but wrong understanding of the word Passover. Passover is an English word that sometimes conjures up in our own minds the idea of something just being skipped, being ignored. But it's not actually that. It's a picture instead of God actively coming and standing between. When He passed over, what He did is He went to the houses of the children of Israel, and He stood in the gap between the angel of death, who was coming to bring judgment on the houses of Egypt, and He stood between that angel of death and the houses of the children of Israel. So the Passover of God is not a passive or just avoiding thing. It is an active engagement on the part of our God. God went to every house that had demonstrated faithful obedience by applying the blood of the Lamb. And He stood as a protection, which is another meaning for the Hebrew word Pesach. He stood as a protection for the children of Israel. So this is a marvelous, marvelous weekend, Shabbat HaGadol, when we remember bringing those lambs to our houses and waiting with anticipation for the time when we would have to sacrifice the lamb. I want to read to you from just the first few verses now from the beginning of Parshat Tzav. It's found in Leviticus chapter 6, verses 8 and 9. It says, "Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Command Aaron and his sons." And commentators say when it uses this form tzav and command, it means there's a sense of urgency, that what is to be done is to be done quickly. "Command Aaron and his sons, saying, This is the Torah of the burnt offering," or of Ha'olah. "The burnt offering will be on the hearth upon the altar all night, until the morning, and the fire of the altar shall be kept burning on it." The Jewish sages explain the purpose of this particular offering. They said, I'll just go through some examples. I'll quote, for instance, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said, "This is for the sins of the contemplation of the heart." or for having forbidden thoughts. And he enumerated what some of those forbidden thoughts were. Here are some examples. Fear of the sword. Fear of tyranny. Idle thoughts. Thoughts of the evil inclination. Thoughts of sexual licentiousness. Thoughts of evil women. Thoughts of idolatry. Here's one that really got my attention. Thoughts of being controlled by others. Can you imagine that was considered an evil thought, a forbidden thought? Oh no, people are going to control me. That's sin. And obsessive thoughts. Those are some of the examples. In the Jerusalem Talmud, in section Yoma, it says that this offering was for the thoughts of the heart. And it goes on to say that the thought of a sin can actually be worse than the sin itself. That it's possible sometimes to so have that sin working on the inside of you, the thought of it, that it absorbs you and even begins to dominate you. You wouldn't act it out, but it rules over you. Bitterness is another one of those things that can be like this. Have you ever forgiven someone 1,000 times? You've forgiven them 100 times. You've forgiven them 70 times 7. And then they do something again. And Rabbi Ari Kahn wrote, the Olah was an offering which brought about forgiveness for thoughts. Just as a person's passions burn at night, this sacrificial animal, which represents the physical side of a person, burns all night until only spirit is left. You put that on the altar and it burns all night because the trouble that you have burns all night too. One of the reasons why I say that this sacrifice is little known among modern Jewish people is because many Jewish people think that only action is sinful and only action is beneficial. So only if you carry out the actions of the mitzvot are you doing anything. It's almost as if there is a divide between thought and action. I don't think such people would agree, but I think that that's like an old Gnostic error, a division of soul and spirit, of the natural and the supernatural, of the physical person and the spiritual person. That's an error of many philosophers and many religions. And it's crept into the Jewish world where Jews think it's okay. What you think is a private thing, it doesn't do any damage to anyone. And you can see how far that principle can go, even in a secular world where people say anything done between two consenting adults is okay, right? It does no harm. They agree to do it. And yet it is the traditional Jewish teaching, and it is the teaching of the Messianic Jews, that the arena of thought and the arena of the heart is just as important as the arena of action. And there's a reason. They're not separate from each other. They're connected. The things that we ponder, the things that are deep within us, become the things that rule over us. That's why it's important to let joy have its way with you, so that the joy of the Lord becomes familiar to you. The joy of the Lord is developed in you. The joy of the Lord becomes part of your internal being, and the joy of the Lord accompanies you when you go out into the rough real world that you live in, and you have to be helpful to other people. And there are times, Brian Stone gave an example, that he had someone come to him this week with an impossible situation, and he remembered Wednesday night, and he burst out laughing, and it was a little awkward to laugh with someone present who was bringing such an impossible situation, really difficult. But in that moment of laughter, is it true that that person started laughing too? Yeah. And while they were laughing at this most serious of situations and impossible situations, an answer came. Brian gave that answer. It was like, wow, it solved everything. Is that correct, Brian? Brian's in the back nodding his head. Imagine had he only applied seriousness to that. What if his only weapon in life was, you know, like to get more serious? Do you know that seriousness sometimes is a sickness? Did you know that's why you can be deadly serious? Sometimes the more serious you get, the more locked in you are to a situation. And the only way out is another way. Sometimes you just need to be sick and tired of being serious. And it's not because you don't have the ability to understand what's going on. But the application of seriousness does not always bring a breakthrough. How many of us really wish that worry would cause a breakthrough? And that anxiety would change everything? Don't we sometimes act like that? We imagine the right response to our circumstance and our situation, and we realize the correct response should be agony, worry, gloom, despair, and agony. Oh my. And then we apply that to the situation, and nothing changes. And the worst of it is, it doesn't seem to move God. I've tried to move Him with worry. Lord, You need to be worried like I am. Maybe you pray like that sometimes, in your own words. And I found He doesn't take up my anxiety. He doesn't take up my worry. He is willing to take upon Himself my worry. But there's a price for that. I have to give it up. Right? If I say, Sandy, come up here for just a second. I want to demonstrate. If I'm trying to say to the Lord, yeah, that's right. You didn't even volunteer. If I just say, I want You to be as anxious as I am.
Sometimes I am.
Sometimes she is. Sometimes she'll go along with that. But you see, the Lord won't. The Lord won't have fellowship around my anxiety when I'm trying to get Him to be anxious. Now, you know what the Lord does? The Lord says, if You give it to Me, I'll take it from You. And so I can walk together if I say, now You're like the Lord. Would You take this off of me? I can't bear it. Oh, You're so sweet. You can be. Thanks, honey. When you say to the Lord, I'm going to give it to You, He will take it. And one of the most awkward things, but the most true things about the new covenant is you can actually give to Him the burden of it all. It is not irresponsible. It is correct to say to Him, I cannot carry this. Will You carry it? I said earlier that many Jewish people are not aware of the fact that it is true that thoughts and attitudes of the heart can be sinful, and that that's important. It's also important to know that Yeshua takes up the same theme about sinful thoughts on many, many occasions. But this is one that's quite clear when He speaks about adultery. It's recorded in the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 5, verses 27 and 28. And He says, you have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. Now, where would they hear that? From the Torah, right. It's true. I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. You see, that's consistent with the teachings of the Jewish people for eons. That the things that happen in our heart are important to God and need to be brought under God's authority as well. The action of adultery is different than the thought of adultery. Believe me, if you're going to have to confess to a spouse that you committed adultery, you would prefer that it was the thought of adultery and not the real thing. And your spouse will too. There is a distinction between the punishments that are meted out for sin of action versus sin of thought. But they are connected. Both require forgiveness from God. Yeshua says the action and the intention of the heart towards adultery are both of the same kind, commission of adultery. He's already committed adultery in his heart because he's been making a way for adultery to grow up in his heart. And Yaakov, James, the Jewish apostle, makes it really clear to us that we need to see the important connection between the things of the heart and mind and the things of action. In chapter 1, verses 14 and 15, he says, each one is tempted when he's carried away and enticed by the lusts and desires in his own heart and mind. And then when lust and desire have conceived, they give birth to sin. And when sin is accomplished with action, it brings forth death. And so he's drawing out this most important principle for us, that there is a connection between the things of the heart, the things of the mind, and the things of our behavior. It's not just a matter of controlling our behavior. We also want to learn how to bring our thought life, our heart life, to the Lord. Now, I love what Paul says to the Ephesians. He gives this overarching solution for this. It doesn't sound terribly practical, but in a certain way, it just covers everything. He says in chapter 4 of Ephesians, verses 23 and 24, be renewed in the spirit of your mind. So what's a key solution to be renewed in the spirit of your mind? What's the spirit of the mind? You know, it's just not mentioned in the scriptures. So you have to try to understand it, you know, at face value. It is that connection between spirit and mind that needs to be renewed. It's that connection where the spirit that can rule over your mind and rule over your thoughts is the dominant force. When you take personal responsibility to exercise your autonomy before God, when you say to God, I am submitted to you, now allow everything that you've got to work to renew me. In a spiritual way, in a mental way, in an emotional way, in every way. It's similar to what the psalmist did when he said, bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me, bless his holy name. He was taking personal authority over his soul. Have you ever had a situation or a moment when your soul didn't want to bless God? But you can still assert authority. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and everything that is within me. There are times when your mouth wants to complain, does it not? And when your heart finds it easier to imagine things going poorly than things going well. Right? If you read the news or watch the news or consume the news in any way, and if you pay attention to evangelical Christianity, you'll notice something, that there is a preoccupation right now with the bad news. That there are more people willing to spend time and money to hear the bad news. And not just today's bad news, but impending bad news. What could get worse? We'll tell you. The most prophetic thing, some people think, is to declare how much worse it's going to get. There is a huge market for the bad news among those who confess they belong to Messiah. Part of this is because people don't understand the word gospel. They think it's about music. It's a form of music. That's not really what it is. It means good news. Say that with me. Good news. Gospel means good news. If you don't have good news, you don't have the gospel, right? If you have good news, you have the gospel. Is that simple? But do you know what? People will pay more money and give more time to hear the bad news. Just test that thought. Think back on emails that have come your way in the last few weeks, articles you've heard, TV shows you've watched, friends and statements they've made. Now, there's a lot of bad news. We don't have to fabricate it. We don't have to project it. There's plenty of it. There's more than enough to go around. I'm not talking about that reality. I'm talking about the attitude of the heart, that it's easier for many people to spend their time absorbed in the coming bad news. The coming collapse of the one world system. Sounds interesting, doesn't it? But how often do we just hear nice prophetic voices saying, it's going to work out? And yet Yeshua says it's going to work out through everything. No matter how bad it gets, it's going to work out. No matter how hard it gets, it's going to work out. It just depends on your definition of working out. That doesn't mean you get to keep all your stuff. This is Jewish good news, I'm telling you. Passover's coming. Guess what? No one gets to keep their property. What? We've lived here on this land for 400 years. Goshen is ours. No. You are not even of Goshen. You don't belong to Goshen. If you want to stay part of Egypt, you can't stay part of Israel. So you have to give up all your land rights to leave. You have houses. Debt free. No mortgage. Everyone gets to leave his house. And what do we get in exchange? Sukkot. Huts. Shacks. You know, it just sounds so much better when you say Sukkot than shack. Doesn't it? Lord, you were faithful to us. You gave us shacks to live in. It just sounds easier. You gave us Sukkot, a sukkah to live in. But at Passover, there was an exchange. There was a transformation. There was a demarcation. People marked themselves as belonging to God with the blood of the Lamb. And they went out with nothing, in a sense, except their future, one another, their hope, their God, their covenant. Everything else had to be left behind. Paul says, be renewed in the spirit of your mind and put on the new self. Put on the new self, which in the likeness of God has been created in righteousness and holiness of the truth. We don't have time to get into all the nuances of the new self, but we can say the major characteristic of the new self is that it is new. It's not what was old. It's one of the reasons why you don't want to die to yourself if you put on the new self. You want to die to sin. Not to yourself. You see, if you finally put on the new self, you don't want to then go kill that. That's what's trying to live, trying to express itself in you. You want to nourish that, nurture it. You want it to be fully alive. Put that one on. It was created in righteousness and holiness. This process of transformation at Passover is connected to the reality of marking ourselves with the blood of the Lamb. And on that Passover night, 4 days after, the taking of the lambs on the 10th of Nisan, those lambs were sacrificed, the blood was put on the doorpost. You had to do it if you were obedient. And amazingly enough, no one would do it for you. No priest would come to your house. No evangelist, no pastor, no rabbi, nobody else would come to you. You got a word from Moshe from on high. Do it this way. And if you did it, God was counting it as your faith, your obedience and trust in Him. And you marked the doors with blood. Some of the Jewish sages say that we have to understand how dangerous it was for the Jewish people to do that, because they say that the lamb was one of the deities of the Egyptians. And so to sacrifice the lamb, now imagine it like this. All of Israel brings lambs to their house. And it's almost as if there's a battle right there. There are stories that the Jews tell that when the children of Egypt saw that the children of Israel had brought lambs on the 10th of Nisan and brought them to their houses, they asked what were they for, and they were told this is a sacrifice for us. And some of the firstborn of Egypt pleaded with all of Egypt, repent, let Israel go now, don't wait. And the Jewish legends are that the firstborn of Egypt went to war with the rest of Egypt trying to fight to let Israel go. Some against others. The Bible mentions nothing of this. This is from the faded memories or even imagination of the Jewish people. But what was perfectly clear was the Jewish people marked their houses with the blood of the Lamb. And everyone had to do it. Everyone was the same. No distinction. No high, no low. Everyone was the same. And when they did that, they were marking themselves as belonging to the Lord. And they were saying that it is our God who will protect us and will deliver us out of here. Now, it's important to understand that in order to know what was Paul really saying when he said that Messiah is our Pesach. In Corinthians, he speaks to them and he says, celebrate the Passover. Get rid of the leaven, not just of the house, but of the heart, he says. Remove it. And it was clear they were familiar with these ideas. Already, though they were not Jewish, they were familiar with the ways of the Jewish people at Passover. And so when he was saying that Yeshua is our Pesach, he was saying something. He was saying that Yeshua is the one who stood between us and death. That he is the one who liberates us from bondage and from slavery. He delivers us from judgment. Judgment was sent to Egypt. And only those who were marked with the blood of the Lamb were delivered. In saying Yeshua is our Pesach, our Passover, we're saying that His blood is recognized by the God of Israel. That He's the one we must eat. That He's the one who brings redemption to our family. And He is the one who is the demonstration of our faith. When we take confidence in Him and apply His blood into our lives, we are saying this is a demonstration of our faith in the God of Israel. He's the one who separates us from faithlessness. When we mark ourselves with the blood of Yeshua, we are saying, don't count me among the unfaithful. I'm with the faithful. I'm not with Egypt, I'm with Israel. When judgment comes, I have a Pesach. We're saying He's the one by whom we're protected. He protected us, we couldn't protect ourselves. And He's the one by whom we declare who we belong to. We mark ourselves with the blood of the Lamb as being God's possessions. And we're saying, this house belongs to God. He's the master, we're His possession. And you know what? The blood of the Lamb becomes a sign in the invisible world that we belong to God and not to the angel of death. Some of you will need that because you're in spiritual battles these days. And you don't know how to wage war and how to establish victory for yourselves. And sometimes all you can do is proclaim that you have the blood of the Lamb. Only that. Yeshua, being the Pesach, is the one by whom we proclaim our national identity. And we proclaim our identity publicly for all to see, including our enemies. When the Jewish people marked their houses with the blood of the Lamb, they were saying, here we are. Here we are. When we mark ourselves with the blood of Yeshua, we're saying, here we are. Of course, you can hide yourself away, but that's dangerous. Hiding yourself away is the same as applying the blood to your inner door or the back door, not the front door. But the front door is where the battle is. All these things are contained in the idea that Yeshua is our Pesach. No wonder He's our Pesach. Because in saying that one word, we're saying so many things. Do you see? The more you know about Pesach, the more you know about the historic exodus from Egypt, the more you understand that that reality was foundational for Yeshua being the Pesach. It's not just the figure of speech. I was looking on the internet about some of this just to see. So I put in an interesting word combination. I put in like Pesach, Passover, and Christian to see what would come up. I was just curious. One entry came up, and it was a citation of the Greek Pascha, which is a transliteration of the Hebrew Pesach. And it said this, it said Pascha, the name of two different holidays, for the Jews Passover, for the Christians Easter. I chuckled, because that's not what Pascha means. That's merely a distortion of the word. Pascha, in the Greek of the New Testament scriptures, means Passover. That's what it means. So here's the question. People say to us, do you celebrate Easter? And I say, no. And they say, well, do you believe in the resurrection of Yeshua, the Messiah? I say, yes. Well, then when do you celebrate the resurrection? And I say, all the time. And during Passover especially, but not only. It's not like a once a year thing for me. Oh, by the way, did you know that He rose from the dead too? Just in case you forgot. No, this is not something to remember once a year. This is something to remember all the time. All the time. If He did not rise from the dead, we of all people ought to be really aggravated. That's right. We ought to be hopeless if He didn't rise from the dead. But He did. And so we are not. When you decide that your inner life and your outer life are going to be integrated, you're not going to have one in right order and the other one out of order. You're well on your way. At Pesach, it's a good time to get those two things lined up together. To decide that your inner life and your outer life will be one and the same. That you'll set a high standard for yourself. The renewal of the spirit of your mind. The deliverance from all bondage. The hope for God's Passover victory to be applied to you. When Yeshua died, his disciples who had been told everything. That's why Yeshua said at the last Seder, I call you friends. Because everything I've told you. When he died, it ruined everything for them. Because they thought that was the end. When he rose from the dead, Yeshua brought this news to some women who believed it better than some men. Right? I'm just telling what the Bible says. And the news of Yeshua's resurrection was considered too difficult for men to believe at first. Men, you who are married, that's why you need wives. It's one of the reasons. Because your wives can believe certain things you can't. Or won't. Or find it difficult initially. And just because you don't believe it, doesn't mean it's not true. Yeshua rose from the dead. And then he ascended into heaven. And then we found out that was just a chapter. That wasn't the end when he died. This story goes on. It ends well. It's got its ups and downs, does it not? But it ends quite well. Remember that for the season that you're in. It ends well. Turn to someone next to you and say, it ends well. It ends well. Here's the end. Heaven has victory over hell. Right? Righteousness has victory over evil. Right? You start filling in the blanks and start reminding yourselves of these things and start telling other people. When people are telling you the bad news, say, you know that may be true, but I've got something else in addition to that. Some trust in horses, some trust in chariots, some trust in the stimulus package. Some trust in economics. But we will remember the Lord our God. Okay, let's be strong. That's why we need joy. You know, joy will make you strong. We have proof. We're going to close with a blessing. Would you stand up for this? Three good Hebrew prayers to close with tonight. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech ha'olam asher bachar banu mikol ha'amim v'natan lanu et torato. Baruch atah Adonai noten ha'torah. Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who has chosen us from all peoples and given us your Torah. Blessed are you, O Lord, giver of the Torah. And then this is one of my favorite prayers, the Vene Emar, from Zechariah chapter 14, verse 9. Vene Emar v'haya Adonai l'melech al kol ha'aretz, b'yom ha'hu yiyeh Adonai echad u'shmo echad. It has been said, the Lord will be king over all the earth. In that day, the Lord will be one and his name one. It ends well. Let's close with Aaron's blessing. Everyone gather together. No one stand by yourself. Moses was told to tell Aaron that by this you put God's name on the children of Israel. Yivarechecha Adonai v'yishmarecha. Ye'er Adonai panav elecha v'chunecha. Yisa Adonai panav elecha v'yasem lecha shalom. The Lord bless you. The Lord keep watch over you and protect you. The Lord cause the light of His face to shine upon you. The Lord be gracious to you with all favor beyond what you ever deserved. The Lord lift up His face to you and give you shalom. In the name of Yeshua, the Prince of Peace. Amen. Shabbat shalom.